Israel encountered in the process of taking this land. And in looking at this, we see the central campaign, and we know that they started with the city of Jericho. You didn't see that, but it actually flashed a little thing there. The city of Jericho, which is located just above the Dead Sea. After they took Jericho, they moved on to what city? Number three. This, by the way, this is group one, this is group two, not three. What city did they take after Jericho, group three? Say it louder. Ai, very good. Ai. Now, did they encounter any problems, group two? What problem did they encounter? They lost the battle. Yeah. And did the Ai come out with a huge number of people is the reason they lost, group one? Why did they lose? Yeah, there was sin in the camp, wasn't it? From what city? Jericho. Okay? So there was sin. Someone had taken something from the city of Jericho, and the man's name was group two. What was his name? Achan. Very good. Glad to hear y'all coming out with it. Achan was his name. Do you remember one thing that he took, group three? A Babylonian garment. That's right. What else? Anybody, group one, can you think of something besides the Babylonian garment that he took? Silver, okay. What else? Two? A wedge of gold, okay. Now, after he had taken that, he did something with it, group one. What did he do with it? He hid it, where? Under his tent. That's right. And when everything was all said and done, how did they find it, group three? He showed it to them. Yeah. He confessed, didn't he, what he had done. I took it. Well, what happened to him, too? Put to death. That was an expensive garment, silver, a wedge of gold, to be put to death for. Exactly what happened. They moved on to Ai after this encounter and took it without any problem when they taken care of the sin of Achan. And they went on to, from Ai, they went on up to Bethel, which is may have been part of Ai, or they may have helped. I'm not really sure about that. It really doesn't give a good clear indication. Later on, we know that the king of Bethel was killed. But we have that listed chapter 12 later on. And so we know eventually the king of Bethel is going to be killed. Now, they move from here up to a place that Moses had told them to go to. What was the name of that place, number one? What was the name of that place? I didn't hear you. Shechem? More specifically, the two mountains. What? Say it again. No. What was those two mountains right there with Shechem in the middle? All right. Gerizim and Mount Ebal. Now, something Moses told them to do on this mountain, at this particular place when they got here. What was it, number three? What were they to do? Anybody know? What were they to do? Something Moses had told them. Yeah. Blessings and curses. Okay? Now, how far apart are these mountains, number two? Approximately. Anybody know? About a mile. About a mile apart. Have you ever tried to yell a mile? You ever tried that? It's hard. I'm sure. They had to have somebody that was pretty boisterous. But if you'll notice, that area right there, that's looking at Mount Ebal from Mount Gerizim. And that's what you see. That's almost like an amphitheater. And the same thing is on the other mountain across from it. So what happens to your voice? It just kind of echoes, doesn't it? You know. Now, there actually have been people in the last few years that have gone over there on tour or whatever. And there were some who went to Mount Ebal and some to Mount Gerizim. And they yelled out to one another. You reckon they could hear? They did. They heard. Now, a little different today than it was then. Why? It's a city down there with motor vehicles and all that now. Back then, you know, you didn't have the hustle and bustle of buses and cars and those kind of things back then. And so they could hear better. If you're out on the river, even here a lot of times, you know, you can just talk in a normal voice and a guy way over yonder can hear you pretty good out on the river. He kind of carries pretty good. Just a kind of a hint there to let you know that those kind of things are available even today. But Mount, that Shechem in the middle, who was it that came to Shechem way back? Abraham. Okay, very good. All right, chapter 9 begins with the king. Kings of the west, west of Jordan. They heard of the conquest that Israel had seized the central hill country. The deception they'd heard about, the deception of the Gibeonites. In that deception of the Gibeonites, can group one tell me one thing that they had that would lead somebody to think they come from a long way off? One thing. Molded bread. Two, what was another one? Wine skins that were cracked and what have you. Number three, can you think of one more? Say it one more time. All right, tattered clothes and shoes and so forth. Very good. All right. That tells me y'all listen. That's great. All right. Israel was to make no covenant with the people of the land of Canaan. And as we look at these passages right here in Exodus 23, verse 32, God's talking to Moses at this time. And he said, thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. If they let those people stay, they were going to encourage them to join them in their worship. Other gods. The same thing can happen today, folks, if we run with the wrong people. Okay, how young or how old you are. You run with the wrong people, they're going to influence you. And it's generally not good. And so we have to be careful who we associate with even today. In Exodus 34, verse 12, God speaks to Moses, says, take heed to thyself, lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land whither thou goest, lest it be for a snare in the midst of thee. But you shall destroy their altars, break their images, cut down their groves. In other words, don't leave anything that will tempt you. Okay? The same thing could go today. Get away from anything that will tempt you. Whatever it might be today, tempt you to turn from God. You need to do the same thing. The Gibeonites had figured out that Israel was not making covenants with the people of Canaan, so they devised the plan, and they had heard all the things that done in Egypt, Sihon and Og. They heard all of those kind of things, and they said that our elders had told us to take supplies of the journey, and so they did, and they showed them all this bread and their skins and their clothes and shoes and so forth. And Israel was convinced, but they didn't check with who they should have. They should have asked God about it. And they did not do that. 3 days later, they found out that these were the Gibeonites and they lived very close by. So Joshua called them and said, "Why have you done this? Why? Well, what do you think?" They did it. They knew they were going to be killed. They looked at what had happened to these other cities that they had already conquered, and they just annihilated them. And they were gone. And so they just said, "We're in your hand. Do with us whatever you want to do, you know." And so they made them to be carriers of water and woodcutters. Where would that be used? Group one. Sacrifice. That's right. A lot of sacrifices. A lot of that water and the wood was used in sacrifices. And you think about how many sacrifices these people did at the tabernacle on a daily basis. I mean, there were a lot of sacrifices. And so they needed a lot of water and a lot of wood for the sacrifice. So, the Gibeonites came to have a kind of a, you might say, a semi-official capacity by working there with and for the priests and Levites around the temple. The southern campaign is what's coming up now, and they go from Gilgal down to Gibeon, of course. And then they move on down to the other cities. Let me back up and see if I can name some of them for you. I think it'll show them up a little bit later. But you've got cities like Makeda, Hebron, Debir, Lachish, Eglon. A lot of those cities that in the southern region of Palestine that they're going to be taking during this southern campaign. So now we get to Joshua 10 through 12. This is where our class actually begins tonight. Adonizedek, king of Jerusalem, heard of what Gibeon had done, and he was not pleased. He could see that Israel had kind of taken them under their wing, you might say. And so he became afraid, knowing that Gibeon was a great city. So he wanted to take care of Gibeon, really. And so he sends a message to the king in Hebron, Hoham, king of Hebron, Hiram, king of Jarmuth, and Japhia, king of Lachish. All of these kings, he sent a message to them, and so he could have them to come with him, you might say, and go against the Gibeon, more or less. Okay? And this is just outlining some of those cities where those people were from. All right. Let me get there in a minute. Okay. There we go. Alright. So, the message from the King of Jerusalem stated, this. He said, come and join forces with me and let's go get Gibeon. Let's take care of them because they've joined forces with Israelites. So the Amorite kings all gathered together and encamped against Gibeon to make war. And that's in verse 5 of chapter 12. They were trying to force Gibeon, more or less, and the Hivites to join back with them. Get away from Israel, come back to our side. So we can all go against Israel. Now, so instead of that, Gibeon, they called on their new allies and said, hey, we got to have help. These folks are coming against us, and it's not going to be good. So do not delay, hurry up and come and help us. And so they further explained how all the kings had joined forces to Joshua and them. And Joshua gathered his army together, and God told him, what? Don't be afraid. What had God told before they crossed Jordan? What he had told Joshua? None of these places are going to be able to stand before you. So don't worry. You go ahead. And so, don't be afraid, of them because I've delivered them into your hand. Not a man of them will stand before you. So Joshua and Israel travel all night. Traveled all night. They made a surprise attack on the Amorites, and they just wasn't able to fight because Jehovah actually fought the battle. And Jehovah, you might say, just turned it into a rout. What is a rout? Yeah, you did. It just complete annihilation almost, you know. And so they fled to Beth Horon, which descends very steeply, going towards the Mediterranean Sea. It's a kind of a steep area where they were actually going. And Jehovah actually cast some large stones upon them. Could have been hailstones, but could have been just a big rock slide that was caused. I don't know. It just said great stones. It could have been either one. But we also find that during this, that Jehovah actually killed more, and they died at his hand more so than that died at the hand of the Israelites. Israel pursued the armies to Azekah. Most of the battle took place in the Shephelah. All right. Three, tell me where the Shephelah is. I don't want to hear you. Where's the Shephelah? Come on. Shephelah. All right. It's right beside the coastal area. Very good. The coastal plains and the coastal area is right along the Mediterranean. And the next section is the Shephelah. What comes after that, too? The hill country. What comes after that? One? Ah? Jordan Valley. What comes next, too? Transjordan. Very good. All right. We're getting some of this stuff across, whether you believe it or not. All right, good. All right, so they pursued them. Joshua prayed to God, and he asked something that has never been done. He asked for the sun to stand still. And as they were traveling in the fighting of the army of the battle. It was about what time of day that this took place, that the sun stood still. What time of day was it? Three? Anybody know? 2? Anybody know? What time of day? Say it again. Noon. It was about noontime. Okay. So, you think about these people who were battling in the heat of the day, and they were fleeing. And you, can you imagine? The sun just stayed there. And it got hotter and hotter and hotter. Couldn't you just see them waiting for the sun to go down where it would cool off a little and where they could get a hiding place maybe? And it didn't happen. And how long did it stay there, one? About a whole day. It stayed in that place for a whole day. Has never happened like that before and never happened like that again. As a matter of fact, the people who keep the records of the days and everything have added that day in and found that it does actually did exist. So Joshua 10:12, then spake Joshua to the Lord, and this is when he asked for the sun to stand still, basically, in 10:12 and 13. You find that written in the book of Jasher. Not in my Bible. Where's the book of Jasher? We don't know. We don't have that. But the sun stood still in the midst of heaven and hastened not to go down for a whole day. But you see that Gibeon is that right there, and that's close to the area where the battle was. Somewhere close to that anyway. But the Amorites were fleeing from Israel and could hardly wait for darkness. And you can just imagine that they got hotter and hotter as they were traveling and battling. So the sun never did set. So you can just imagine what's going on as they were fighting this battle. None like this day before, none after. The five kings fled before Israel, and the five kings were, okay, it didn't come up. All right, when they were caught, okay, and this is a relief that has been found, and this was something similar to what they did to kings when they were captured in battle. They actually impaled them on poles and stood them before the people. Now, they did something here before they did this. Okay? And what they did before that... Well, that's the places where they actually battled. At Makeda, at Hebron, Lachish, Eglon, and Libna. Those are the places that the battle took place. From Kadesh Barnea to Gibeon, every enemy had been defeated now. Every one of them. And so Joshua was able to destroy all of these kings, their cities, because Jehovah was with them. Joshua and Israel returned to Gilgal. Something missing here. I don't know exactly. But Jabin, king of Hazor, heard about what happened to Israel. Conquest of the southern hill country. He found out about it. So he knew something had to be done to stop Israel coming up to the northern section for the northern campaign that we're going to be looking at. So he sent... I'm sorry. Yeah. They did, and it didn't come up. I don't know why, but I missed that for some point. Let me see if I can go back and find that. There it is, right there. Yeah. The cave, that they had actually sought refuge in the cave, that all the kings had, and they was told Joshua where they were, so they just piled stones up and kept them there. They couldn't get out. And then when the battle was kind of finished, they came back to this place. And that's where it tells us in the scripture that they had their bodies taken from the poles and thrown in the cave. Okay. That's those impaled poles. Now, just before this, he had ordered, let's see if that's on there too. But he had ordered his, captains, when he got the men out of the cave, he said, "Now I want you captains of the Israelite army to come over here and you put your foot where? On their neck." Can you imagine laying down there on the ground, somebody with a foot on your neck? That was to show something. What? Who? What would that show? That would show everybody who was seeing that we are the captives. We overtook these with God's help, and Joshua wanted everyone to see that they had captured these people. And then after this is when they actually put them up on poles. Joshua and Israel returned to Gilgal. All right. Now let's see if we can get back through with that. All right. This is I told y'all about a tale, and this is the tale of Hazor. Okay. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit more information about Hazor in a few minutes. But if you look, this is the city of Hazor right up here. Look what it takes to get up to that city. How far up it is off of, you might say, sea level, but ground level, you might say. Now, why is it like that? We talked about that. Why is it like that? Okay? Hazor had been destroyed time and time again, and each time each time there would be a level of dirt put on top. I found a picture of that actually happening that showed how they do that. But all the dirt and debris and the stones and everything just kind of smoothed out, and they bring dirt and just cover it all over, and they build on that site there. Is that done today? You think of a place around here where that's been done? Right up here on 31. That's exactly right. They brought dirt in and they put a layer down, they pack it down, and not only there, but the landfill on down just a little bit further. You know, it was the same way. They covered it over, and eventually, you know, somebody's gonna go there and dig all that stuff up. You reckon? See, that's what happened to a lot of these cities. As time goes by, and they would go all the way down and look at what was down there on the very bottom level. And a lot of times it's old broken pottery. You ever throw any away broken stuff? We do, don't we? It's in the landfill, that's right. And that's what they would use to put down broken pottery, broken this, broken that, and then they'd cover it over with dirt. And the dirt had to come from, and they couldn't bring it from a long distance, so it had to come from around the bottom of that tail. And when they do that, that's all the good dirt all around that. And I've actually seen pictures where there was a guy actually farming the side of that tail, because that's all the good dirt. So anyway, that's I'm no charge for that. But he sent to follow the kings, and those kings were Madon, Shimron, Akseth, kings to the north in the hill country, and in the Jordan Valley near Chinnereth, also those in the plain, and that Dor. He called the Canaanites, the Hivites, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, and the Jebusites. All of these different nations, you might say, were going to come together against Israel. Well, there was an army that assembled, and it looked like the sands of the sea. You ever walked across the sands by the sea? A lot of sand. But there was a lot of people that came against Joshua at this time and the children of Israel. Many of the horses, they had many horses and chariots, and they made camp at the waters of Merom, which is kind of in the northern section. This was the largest army that Joshua will encounter in this whole process. That's Hazor right there. It's located just below the Sea of Galilee, Hazor. Okay? And it's on the other side of Jordan, basically. This is Maidon. And that's Shimron, I believe it is. Hard to see all these. But anyway, that's some of the places that they actually came from, Ashkelon, and different places. That's Dor, right out on the Mediterranean Sea. And so there are several of these places that all came together. And part of them were Canaanites, part of them were Hittites, part of them were Amorites, part of them were, that's Hittites, the other ones were Hivites, sorry. And down at the bottom there were Jebusites and the other ones. All right. So Joshua and his forces came upon the enemy suddenly. The Lord gave them into their hands. They destroyed them and ran them to Sidon and Mizrahmain and the valley of Mizpah and further even. So Israel fought until no enemies were left. The horses were crippled and the chariots burned. Why were the horses crippled? A good horse. Why were they crippled? One. Yeah, they burned the chariots. That's not why they crippled them though. Why did they cripple them? They couldn't fight again. These were really fast horses, and who had told them not to have horses? Who? God did. He don't want you to have horses. He don't want you to rely on those things because he wanted you to rely on God. Okay? Now, up to this point, they've relied on God. God has taken care of them. He's poured these big stones on them. He's taken care of them even this time. And it doesn't stop there. It goes on. Hazor dates back about 1500 years. So you can see it's an old city. And so you can kind of tell from that layer after layer after layer over 1500 years, you could see how it could be a huge mound like we saw. It had massive walls and it covered about 200 acres in the city. How big was Jericho? How many acres? 7. 7 acres. This is a lot bigger. 200 acres. That's a big farm, even today, the farm. 200 acres. And this was just inside the wall. What about outside? What happened outside? One. What did it do outside? The walls. They farmed it. Yeah. They farmed outside these walls. And you saw what Hazor looked like. So you'd think about, they had to go down that big long hill just to get to their farm, you know? But anyway. So, Hazor was rebuilt after the days of Joshua. And we will encounter a Canaanite king in Hazor in the days of Deborah the judge. In just a few weeks, we'll get to the judges And we'll learn about that particular situation then. Solomon also makes it one of his fortified cities to control the northern section of Israel when Solomon comes to reign. So the cities of the land, the cities were not burned. Some of them were not. And it became kind of a mixed blessing. However, the Israelites couldn't get all of their families there in time to inhabit those places. So what happened was some of those Canaanites that had actually fled and got away, they came back into those cities. And they actually began to rebuild them. And so we're going to find that they're going to show up later. Well, verse 1 through 6, Joshua 12, tells about the kings east of the Jordan. And the rest of that book actually gives the kings on the west side of Jordan. You can look at those if you want to and try to name them, try to call their names if you'd like. I really don't see that it's necessary, but there were still Canaanites left throughout the land at this point. The conquest has gone as God intended it did. They took the land, and that was the whole purpose. God had led them to victory over every king and city that had challenged them. The Israelites are now in control of the land. The final task of clearing out all the inhabitants of all the villages will take place little by little as they get the land divided. Then each tribe will finish clearing out their land. Ephraim, Manasseh, half tribe Manasseh, other half tribe, they'll start clearing the people out, running them out, killing them, whatever, to get them out of their land, right? That's what they were supposed to do, wasn't it? The only problem was they didn't do what God said. God said he would not drive out all the Canaanites because what would take over if he did? Wild animals. If everything is gone and the Israelites are still where? Gibeon? Possible. They're all still there. They hadn't inhabited the land yet. But they've conquered it all, but they hadn't got to those cities yet. And so if all the people were gone, then wild animals. What kind of wild animals are over there? We read about some a little later on, right? Remember a priest got eaten? And also somebody that come out of saying something about a bald-headed man, what came out? Bears? There's a lot of wild animals over there, okay? So, God didn't drive them out because of the wild animals. God assured them that he would continue to help drive out all the inhabitants.